Thank you. So I will speak today about the work that I've been doing last year, since in the last year with in Queen Mary. So I've been doing this work with John Papaloizou, who is now working in Cambridge, and Richard Nelson, also from Queen Mary. So just to give you a brief overview of what I'm going to speak about, this is meant to be an accretion disk, it just sketches the general behavior of the dust. It's mainly governed by two processes that I will focus on: vertical settling, which means that dust particles go toward the equatorial plane of the disk, and radial migration to the inner part of the accretion disk. And the main question I want to address in this talk are how does MHD turbulence affect dust settling, and how does MHD turbulence affect dust radial migration. So first I will give you a very short overview of the physical processes that govern dust dynamics in accretion disks. So the dust is influenced by the gas through the drag force, which in the regime that I'm interested in this talk has this form. It's roughly proportional to the differences in the speed of the gas and the dust. And from this formula, you can extract a time scale, which is defined here, and which is the typical time that you need to put that a dust particle need, which is initially at rest, need to get to the fluid velocity. And it is given by this time scale. And with this time scale, you can make a dimensionless quantity, which is omega, the orbital time scale of the disk, the dynamical time scale in the disk, time, the stopping time scale. And if this dimensionless parameter is smaller than one, it means that very, very quickly, within a dynamical time scale, all the dust particle becomes roughly frozen into the fluid. They are able to follow the fluid very quickly. And there is a very good coupling between the dust and the gas. The dust is mostly following the gas. And in this limit, the dust particles are behaving like a fluid. So you can adopt a second fluid description of the dust. And basically, if you want to study this system, you can adopt a two-fluid description, one for the gas and one with a zero pressure for the dust. When this parameter becomes close to one or bigger than one, it means that the gas is no longer able to modify significantly the dust motion within an orbital time scale. You have a weak coupling between both components. And in this case, the two-fluid description is no longer valid because you have many velocity fluctuations in the dust particles. And then you have to follow an n-body approach, treat each dust particle one by one. Oh, sorry, yeah. Here A is the size of the particle. Rho dust is their density. Rho and the gas density, C, the speed of sound. So to understand vertical settling, one just needs to understand this cartoon, basically, which is, once again, a sketch of an accretion disk view in the RZ plane. So these are the boundary of the disk. And if you look at the orbit of gas and dust, because of the vertical pressure gradient, the gas is orbiting at constant altitude, whereas the dust, because it doesn't feel pressure, wants to orbit on inclined orbit, like this one. And as a result, if you go now in the frame rotating with the particle, the dust particle is going to do an orbit around the mid-plane. And because it feels the drag force from the gas, its motion around the mid-plane is going to be damped. And is going to lose it to is going to make damped oscillation around the midplane and go closer and closer to the midplane. That's what happened. It is illustrated in this plot that you may not see very well. In the case of weak coupling, you do many oscillations around the midplane that are damped, and you go closer and closer to the midplane. In the case of a strong coupling between the gas and the dust, you just do one of those oscillations, and you very quickly go toward the midplane. So that's illustrating the vertical setting mechanism. Whoops. How do I come back? Now the radial migration. Once again, you have these two limits. In the weak coupling limit, remember that the gas is orbiting at sub-Keplerian velocity because of radial pressure gradients. However, the dust, once again, doesn't feel the pressure gradient, so it's orbiting at Keplerian velocities. So the dust is constantly moving faster than the gas. It's feeling a headwind because of the drag force, so it loses angular momentum and it migrates inward. In the strong coupling limit, gas and dust are both orbiting at sub-Keplerian velocities. However, once again, the dust doesn't feel the radial pressure gradients, so the centrifugal force, its centrifugal force is not enough to balance gravity from the central object, and once again, it's migrating inward. And for large enough particle of the order of 1 meter in size, the typical time scale to migrate radially in the disk is very short. It's of the order of 100 to 1,000 years, which means that if nothing is done, if you take a population of 1 meter particle, you will quickly lose them toward the central object. So in the rest of this talk, I will try to focus separately on both of these issues and try to see whether or not the MHD turbulence that is triggered by the MRI influences these two processes and what it does. So first, I will focus on dust vertical settling. And to do so, the approach we've adopted is to run stratified disk model, take a small patch of the disk with a vertical stratification and see how the dust is evolving in that. So here's just a remainder of the model. The setup of the model we've used is based on the earlier work of Stone et al. In 1996. Here's the cartoon showing the size of the box. So we have 1 h in radius, 2 pi h in azimuth, and we cover a range of 6 h in the vertical direction, 3 h above and below the midplane. The resolution is here 32 by 100 by 192. We've been talking a bit about this simulation during this program, so let me just mention the boundary conditions we use. They are periodic in Z. The other boundary conditions are the standard one, but in Z we use periodic boundary condition. And to do so, we actually smooth the potential, the gravitational potential, in the upper layer of the disk. We have a threshold here at 2.4 h, and for Z larger than 2.4 h, we take a constant gravitational potential, so that the situation is truly periodic in Z. Then we run this model starting with a zero net flux vertical magnetic field. And let me just show you. Here, this is a snapshot of the density in the RZ plane. And this is typically what people have obtained in the past. You see waves going back and forth in the box. You have fully developed turbulence because of the MRI.
Waves?
Yeah. If you look at the overall properties of the model, you can calculate the stress as a function of time. And here are the Reynolds stress as a function of time. We run this model for 100 orbits. The upper solid curve is the Maxwell stress, and the dashed line is the total stress. And we obtain those stress are normalized by the mid-plane pressure, and we obtain stress which are between 10 to the minus 2 and 210 to the minus 2 over the whole range of the simulation. You see small burst or variation by a factor of 2 in this stress, and this is probably what we discussed earlier in the discussion. You have recurrent channel solution occurring and producing this burst, probably. But overall, these results are consistent with what has been done before. So the idea now is to put dust particles in this box, in this turbulent box, see how it evolves. And one of the important aspects of the effect of MHD turbulence onto this dust particle will be the velocity fluctuations. So one may want to look at the velocity fluctuation, and this is here the velocity fluctuation as a function of z, the altitude, for the three components. And the important one will be the vertical velocity fluctuations, which here you see are normalized by the sound speed, and we found a few percent of the sound speed for the velocity fluctuation in the vertical direction.
So this part here is a volume average over the whole box? Or
no, it's this value here is roughly the mid-plane value. And this is only horizontally average.
Over
time, it's average in the at constant altitude, and then over time on top of it.
Okay.
Is it clear enough?
What about the radial direction?
You average in the radial
and the azimuthal,
direction, yeah. And over time as well. Yeah. So now we started this calculation with small particles with 1 micron particles, for which the dimensionless parameter I mentioned before is 10 to the minus 6, which means that these particles are very well coupled to the gas. Basically, they are passive scalar evolving with the gas.
Can you say what the astrophysical scenario is under which you imagine this being MHD turbulent and thus being present with the small dust stream?
This is for the case of protoplanetary disk, for which we know that these disks are probably not fully turbulent in nature, but to start with, let's assume that they are. The question you want to ask then is, if these disks are turbulent, what is the effect? These protoplanetary disks, if they are turbulent, what is the effect on the dust? There are two limitations to what we have done. First, there is no back reaction from the dust onto the gas. We just treat the reaction from the gas onto the dust. And second, we have no coagulation in this calculation, so we can only treat one population at a time. So the initial setup is illustrated here. We have the turbulent gas, the turbulent disk here represented by the gas. And what we initially put a small layer of dust within one fourth, with a scalite of one fourth, the gas scalite. And we want to see how this sublayer evolves. And the early evolution is illustrated by this movie. So what you see is that turbulence eddies start to drag, steer the turbulence sublayer and make it thicker as time goes on. This full movie here lasts for just a fraction of an orbit, a few tenths of an orbit, so it's really fast. After 1.5 orbits, this is the state of the dust layer. After 5 orbits, it's much more spread. After 10 orbits, and then 15 orbits, you've been able to spread the dust layer almost over the entire volume of the box. So how to interpret this calculation? How to relate that to any model? One can do a very simple model of 3D isotropic and steady state turbulence. And in the context of this model, you can calculate Z would be the distance to which a particle would travel in a time big T, and Z is simply the integral between 0 and big T of the velocity in Z. If you average that over time, it gives 0. Any dust particle has either chance of going up or down the equatorial plane. And the relevant quantity that you want to calculate is the mean square deviation for the altitude of the particle, and which is given by this double integral, which involves here the velocity correlations of the gas. We're speaking of the gas here because I'm focusing on the small particles. And so the important quantity is this function here, which I called SZZ, which involves the velocity correlation. And for this simple 3D isotropic steady state turbulence, this function only depends on the difference between T and tau.
Is that really the same thing? I mean, something's fishy. One of these integrals is over, or one of these correlation functions is for an individual particle. Right? So there's another label, so the middle bar there, is a correlation function for the velocity of the particle at time T.
This one?
The velocity of the particle at time tau. And there's another label attached to that, which is the label of the dust. Particle
with
your
fault. You mean here? That would be the velocity of the dust. That's what you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. But because I'm focusing at the time on these very tiny particles, they are passive scalar in the disk, so they exactly follow the gas. You can look at the gas. That would be true for bigger particles that decouples from the gas. But for very small particles, they very quickly reach the speed of the gas. You can take the gas velocities instead.
And tau are independent variables in a mathematical sense. I mean, then I do one integral, I do my tau integral holding t constant. So doesn't it go to zero? Tom, I mean, I really do need to square it before I sort of then average it.
Yeah.
It's a Lagrangian correlation, isn't it? So you should be following the velocity at the moving position of the moving particle.
If T and tau are independent variables, I don't see that issue.
Well. So if you.
But he's done the calculation though, and he didn't get zero, so something.
Yes, that's why.
So Yeah, it's probably this form of writing the formula this function here, that's how it will look. It will only be zero for value of T and tau, which are very close, and then goes to small values because turbulence will get uncorrelated. So for large integral, this function here will stop to depend on the variable T. And what you can do is then extract this second integral from the first one and write this mean square deviation as being proportional to the time and express a turbulent diffusion coefficient, which is simply the integral of this function. And because because it doesn't depend on small t anymore, you can specialize for t equals zero in this formula. So what do you expect this quantities to look like. This density fluctuation quantity function here will simply equal the velocity fluctuation in the z direction at time t equals 0, and then decrease with a correlation time scale, so which you can measure. And then by integrating this, the diffusion coefficient will look as an increasing function. For small t, it will increase linearly in time, and then it will saturate at long for a long time because this function goes to 0. And this is here the order of magnitude value that you can expect for the turbulent diffusion coefficient. And it's quite interesting to see that Carbalido, Stone, and Pringle, by measuring the radial diffusion of passive scalar in MHD turbulence and measuring the diffusion coefficient of this passive scalar as a function of time from a similar behavior for the diffusion coefficient. And this is probably because of this effect. So in the simulation, I showed you how to relate that to this model. So what we have done is, of course, we have stratified this model, so you don't expect this turbulence to be homogeneous and isotropic. But around the mid-plane, where the vertical stratification is small, then you expect that deviation from this 3D homogeneous turbulence to be weak, and you can try to apply this theory. So we've restarted the turbulence disk model, including the dust, at 5 different times after turbulence was established. We've calculated the velocity fluctuations and the diffusion coefficient by space averaging around the midplane, within h around the midplane, by space averaging the physical quantity, and then we took an average between the 5 different models to reduce the scatter. And this is what we obtained for the velocity correlation. As expected, you see a decreasing function of time, which you can match by a decreasing exponential with a time scale, which we measure was about 0.15 orbits. And this is giving you this function with time for the diffusion coefficient, which after half an orbit roughly saturates at a value of 6×10⁻⁶ here, which is very close to the value you could expect from the simple estimate that I showed you before.
What are the units of capital D dust?
That's in units of the sharing box. So
to figure out what to do with that number.
Yeah, you will see. If you want to calculate the standard alpha CS times H of the sharing box, then you will get 10⁻⁵ for a value of alpha of 10⁻². All right. And that will be the same units. But I will show you later how it comes. So now you can try to relate this diffusion coefficient with the evolution of the disk layer, the dust layer that you had. So here, this is, these 4 different snapshots are showing the gas to dust ratio at 9 different times in the simulation, average between the 5 different models. And for so there are 4 different times, starting at 0.15 orbits and going with increments of 0.30 orbits. And as you saw in the movie, the initial profile is spreading upward in time. Sorry? It's the dust to gas ratio as a function of the altitude for different time. going forward in the simulation. So that 0.15 orbit up to 2.65 orbits. And then, because you've we've calculated the expected turbulent diffusion coefficient from the velocity correlation, we can solve the simplest diffusion equation you have with this particular diffusion coefficient that we calculated from the velocity correlation and try to see whether it matched this evolution. So this is what we've done. And the three dashed line in each plot are three models calculating a diffusive evolution of an initial dust layer with three different diffusion coefficients, 10 to the minus 6, 6 times 10 to the minus 6, so which is the one that we measured from the simulation, and 10 to the minus 5. So 10 to the minus 6 is the one for which the diffusion is the slowest, and 10 to the minus 5 is the one for which the diffusion is the fastest. And you see that the curve for which d equals 6 to the 10 to the minus 6 matches the real evolution of the dust quite well, at least in the at least during its initial evolution. Then if you look at later time, after about one orbit, you see that the distribution of the numerical value of the dust to gas ratio start to deviate from what you expect from the theory. And this is especially significant here. And you see that you have a deviation mostly in the upper part of the disk for, so it, you may not see it, but here it's Z equal H. So in the upper part of the disk, you deviate significantly from the value of the diffusion coefficient that you measured from the velocity correlation. And this can be due to two effects. First of all, for this large value of Z, you have a strong vertical stratification. And that may influence the result. The simple theory that I showed before may not be valid anymore. And also it seems from, we looked in details at the simulation, it seems that the correlation timescale for the velocity fluctuation tend to increase when you go to the upper layer of the disk. So that may be also another reason. So this was all for small particles. Now you can do the same calculation for larger particles and start to see the decoupling between the gas and the dust. So this is an illustration of what's going on for particle of size 1 millimeter to 10 centimeters. And at the bottom of these plots, you have the dimensionless parameters that I introduced in the beginning. And you see that for 10 centimeters particle, you start to see a significant settling. But still, remember that this is 6H in total. So the dust disk is spread over at least 0.5H in this regime. Whereas if there was no turbulence, you would quickly get a very thin disk within a few orbits of 1/100th of H very quickly. So MHD turbulence, even in this case, is able to spread the dust disk very well. So once again, you can try to relate those calculations to the simple theory that I showed before by calculating the steady state solution to this time not just to a diffusion equation but to an advection diffusion equation where the gravity is trying to pull back the dust particle toward the midplane and diffusion is moving the particle up in the upper layer of the disk. And this is the result is illustrated here. Once again, I plot the result using the three different diffusion coefficients, and the solid line is the actual numerical value obtained from the steady state, the dashed line are the three values obtained with the three different these three different values. Once again, it seems like that for low altitude in the disk, the model with d equal 6 times 10 to the minus 6 has a better fit to the numerical solution, and the numerical solution deviates from this solution in the upper layer of the disk.
Which of the quantities in that equation actually depend on z?
Sorry?
Which of the quantities in that equation actually depend on z?
Rho.
Of course.
The stopping time scale, too.
That does depend. Okay.
Yeah, that does.
Omega is just the Keplerian.
Yeah. So this first plot was for the 1 centimeter case. This is the same done for the 10 centimeter case. In this case, you see also quite a good agreement between the numerical solution and the solution obtained with a diffusion coefficient of 6 10 to the minus 6. So now to relate to your question about the context of this calculation, we know that protoplanetary disks are probably not completely active. There is probably a dead zone in the middle, which is not turbulent. So how is the presence of this dead zone affecting the result? So to try to answer this question, we've run the models along the same line as what has been done by Fleming and Stone, where we fix a profile for a vertical profile for the resistivity such that the inner, the region close to the equatorial plane of the disk is dead with respect to MHD turbulence, and only the upper region are active. I can once again show you a movie of how it looks like. I was quite surprised when I saw that for the first time. It doesn't look very much different from the first movie I showed you. You still have these waves going back and forth. And this was pointed out in the paper by Fleming and Stone, that MHD turbulence is able to trigger a wave even in the dead zones.
Very little in the way of vertical fluctuations, though, I'd say.
Sorry?
Very little in the way of vertical.
I'll come to that. Here is the vertical, the profile with respect to Z of the Maxwell stress and Reynolds stress average over time. So you see that the Maxwell stress is dropping close to the equatorial plane, while the Reynolds stress stays fairly constant, which again is similar to what this author has found. And here is the velocity fluctuations. So you see a drop in the y and z components of the velocity fluctuations, not so much in the radial velocity fluctuations. Compared to the previous results I had in the ideal MHD case, the vertical velocity fluctuations are decreased by a factor of about 3, but not more. You still have about 2 to 3% of the sound speed. Yeah, probably. Yeah. I'm sorry? I'm still using a vertical, but with no net flux. Okay?
I'm just curious. Any idea why WY dropped?
No. We thought about that. Shouldn't be the case. Now we've put the same dust particle in this model and see and calculate the steady state of the dust to gas ratio in this showing model with the dead zone. And here the results are illustrated for 1 and 10 centimeters again. And in both plots, the solid line show the results with the dead zone, and the dashed line are the results computed in the ideal MHD case. And in both cases, you see that the thickness of the dust layer is reduced in the presence of the dead zone. This is simply because the vertical velocity fluctuations are decreased. But still, if you look at the 10 centimeter case, once again, even in the presence of this dead zone, you're still able to spread the dust sublayer to thickness of about 0.25 h. It's about half of it. Yeah, yeah.
And what's the ratio of the dead zone?
And the ratio of the?
The dead zone column to the...
Yeah, the dead zone mass is about the same as the active mass. This model is the model that it's exactly the same as the large dead zone case of Fleming and Stone.
So just to be clear, it's not change. It's change that ratio. Sure.
Not might, it will change. the biggest the dead zone, the smaller the velocity fluctuation in the dead zone, and the thinner the dead zone might become really, really dead, yeah.
Isn't the problem usually placed in terms of actually dust settling, rather, because it looks like all your simulations here, that's starting to get maybe.
Yeah, yeah. So if we were to start the simulation with dust spread all over the disk, then we would find exactly the same result. We tested that. In steady state, you end up with the same profile for the dust to gas ratio. It doesn't depend on the initial condition. That's fine. So this is ending the first part about vertical settling. Yeah.
If we go into this part, when you've got a large dead zone, so you have no back react well. There's no possibility for vertical Kelvin-Helmholtz instabilities in these simulations.
No, it's not. No,
okay.
It's not possible.
Is there no radial pressure gradients?
There is no radial pressure gradient, and there is no back reaction from the dust on the gas. So we need both to have that. Well, it could be inertial wave or sound wave, because the Reynolds stress is positive, it seems to indicate that it's spiral waves. Because apparently, from what I understood from Steve, inertial waves would give you a negative Reynolds stress.
Exactly.
Which they are. In what I've done, they are independent. Yeah, those are just dynamical models. Now, in real life, you expect that the presence of dust particles will decrease the abundance of the electrons and raise the magnetic diffusivity. Oh, this is because you mean the dust, the diffusion coefficient.
Yeah.
It's because of the fluctuation of the velocity of the gas. So now I move on to a study of the solid bodies of radial migration of larger bodies of tens of centimeters to 1 meter. And to do so,
just to go back to Steve's question about this, the units of the 610 minus 6.
Yeah. So
if you
write
that in dimensionless form, like in
how
does it convert?
Yeah. Right. I will do that. So you can introduce a Prandtl number, which is what people have done, which would be the ratio between the effective viscosity. I know we don't have the right to use that word here.
Now here it's okay, because it's the only way I can understand.
Okay. So you can calculate the ratio. So mu would be alpha CSH divided by D. And for the value that I quoted of 6, 10 to the minus 6, this is giving you Prandtl number between 2 and 3. Okay? I should have said that, I'm sorry. But the thing is that many people have tried to measure this Prandtl number in the past. And Jim Stone has done that. There is another group in Germany that have done that. We have done that. Everybody's finding something different. And the point is that the diffusion of the dust doesn't have anything to do with this quantity, which is the Maxwell, coming mostly from the Maxwell stress. It has to do with the velocity fluctuations, which is why I've tried to emphasize here.
Do you need to make an assumption about the nature of the velocity fluctuations, of their Gaussian or something like that, in order to extract the value of B? Or is that a purely empirical quantity that you just take from the simulation?
That's a purely numerically calculated quantity, yeah. Oh, it doesn't depend for the small size particle. Yeah. Omega tau is smaller than one, so you reach equilibrium very, very quickly. So D doesn't depend on the size. So, well, I will quickly speak about radial migration. So that will be of solid bodies of larger size. And because you are interested in radial migration, you can no longer do a local analysis. So we've developed a global disk model. So this is a rather complicated slide in illustrating the property of the model. These are cylindrical disk models, which are described in details in Steinacker and Papaloisu and other papers. The model is initiated with a non-zero net flux toroidal field, and such that in the turbulent state of the disk, when you reach a quasi-steady state, turbulent state, because of the MRI, the ratio between the total stress and the pressure is once again of the order of 10 to the minus 2. So let me just mention that this, even though this model are quite global, the aspect ratio between the outer edge and the inner edge is only 5 because of computational reason. And the azimuthal range is limited here between 0 and pi over 2. So to investigate dust migration in the context of this model, we've adopted two descriptions we've investigated three different sizes. For 5 and 25 centimeters particle, which are still well coupled to the fluid, we've adopted the two fluid approximation. And for 1 meter of particle, which starts really to decouple, we've used the main body description of the dust bodies. And just that would correspond this size to omega tau equal 1. Yes?
Yeah. Is the global model stratified?
No. It's cylindrical disk model. So you just look at radial migration in the midplane, no settling. So you initially when the disk is turbulent, you start by spreading uniformly the dust particle in the disk model, and you let it evolve. So a lot of the particles are accreted toward the center, but at the end of the simulation, that's how the dust density look like for the 5 and 25 centimeter case. And what you see is that you have zones in the disk here as well, where you tend to accumulate quite a lot of these particles. And if you, that's after about 200 orbits at the initial inner edge of the simulation. And if you look at the time history of the dust to gas ratio for these two cases, you don't see the scale very well here. But you see that you can increase the dust-to-gas ratio by factors which are about 30 for the 5-centimeter case, up to 100 and more for the 25-centimeter case. So this is a very efficient mechanism. Why do you tend to do that? Well, if you look at this plot here, which is showing the gas surface density, about at the middle of the model, you see that MHD turbulence, because the stress in the disk is not constant with radius, you tend to create shallow gaps and pressure maxima in your density in your surface density, and in particular in this region here. in this region here between 2.5 and 3 in radius, you see that the radial pressure gradients become positive. And if you look at the radial velocity of the dust, it's proportional to the radial pressure gradient. So in this region, you tend to have a positive radial velocity for the particle. In this region, you tend to have a negative one, which is also so shown here. Here, the solid line shows the numerical solution, the numerical value that is measured in the simulation of the radial velocity of the dust particles. And the dashed line is actually computed using this equation and this profile of the pressure. And you see that in this region here, the velocity is indeed positive. And so you would tend to accumulate dust particles at this point here, where the velocity vanishes. And this seems to be very efficient. So what we find is that this mechanism is very efficient because you're able to increase locally the dust-to-gas ratio by two orders of magnitude. Now, this may depend on the model. Do you really have shallow gaps in the distribution of the gas in nature? That's an open question. And we find in our simulation that they tend to last for 200 orbits. Is it really the case? That's another question. These simulations are cylindrical, this model, that may be affecting the result. We may also have a memory of the initial condition that may create this shallow gap. So there are still open questions, but if this pressure maxima here survives for that long, then this mechanism is quite efficient. No, these are not just fluctuations. This is a long-lived structure. Lasts for several tens of orbits.
Why is the surface density increasing towards the boundary?
Here and here, we have two buffer zones where the density is made artificially made very large, and the profile of the of omega changes. And this is to prevent the magnetic field from going all the way to the boundary and creating numerical problems.
But it may also be giving you the gross features of your pressure.
Yeah, it could also affect the overall evolution of the disk. So, yeah. The ideal would be to increase the size of this domain, make a much bigger simulation. But it's difficult, obviously.
So do you understand why there were these...
We don't know.
No.
That's much more pronounced in the cylindrical disk calculations than in the vertically stratified calculations. Because in the vertically stratified model, the field just pops out of the disk.
Yeah.
Would that actually be due to the formation of waves? It's not the density that increases more vertically to the edge, you have the attraction of waves.
We don't see much reflection of wave from what I remember. I actually think that it's more related to the fact that it's a cylindrical model. But going to fully stratified model, we may change that. Yeah, even if you do that for 30 orbits, you still tend to accumulate. If you look at...
Everything depends upon your pressure for the bottom. If you're driving it up high in the ends, it has no choice but to have a broad max and minimum in the middle. And so that's going to naturally form a basin for the community.
Isn't the volume of the community?
What? I don't understand your point.
Well, maybe I don't understand yours. Could you go back to the previous slide? Now, what is the feature there which is responsible for collecting the dust? Is it that little tiny blip? Is that the whole storm?
That's the pressure maxima here.
That
Yeah.
Okay. I was thinking the same thing, Steve.
No, it's not the minimum. So I told you we've looked as well at larger particle of size of 1 meter, using this time an n-body approach for the dust particle, because this large particle tends to decouple. And here you see the orbits of 120 of this particle we put in the simulations as a function of time. So you see that some of them are indeed accreted toward the center, as you expect, but as in the previous smaller particle simulation, you see that also other ones accumulate at various radii. And here I should emphasize that there is not just one particle at each place. You have many particles that tend to accumulate at the same location. So pretty much like in the two-fluid description. And overall, we find this process to be quite efficient because we are able to retain 50 to 75% of the mass of the dust in the disk within this 200 orbit of the simulation, whereas in a laminar disk simulation, you would lose everything. Yeah. Well, they're weakly decoupled from the gas. They start to decouple and the two fluid approximation starts to break down. So you... The n-body approach is always valid. Yes, sure, you treat the coupling with the gas. So it's the n-body approach is always valid. It's just that you don't sample as many particles as with the fluid approach in this case. So I think I will just stop here with leaving my conclusion. Thank you.
Questions? Would you expect the dust grains to carry any, the smaller dust grains, to carry any charges in these circumstances?
Yes, you do. If you calculate chemical models of this protoplanetary disk, you see that you have quite a lot of negatively charged particles, which are not treated in these models.
So how would that degree of coupling compare to the collisional coupling?
It's probably quite weak, because the Larmor radius of this particle going around field lines is much larger than the size of the system, I guess. So.
This is really a question about the nature of turbulent diffusion. So it seems like it, you know, really mixing a quantity as opposed to just, you know, bringing it up and taking it down again depends on, you know, sort of details about these chaotic trajectories, right? And I guess my question is whether you can reliably calculate it from a simulation.
You mean whether you can calculate these details or?
Well, whether, yeah, whether you can be sure that that you really can calculate the turbulent mixing rate accurately from an eddy model.
Well, I guess in nature you would have very small scale fluctuation that will affect that as well. In this simulation, everybody is on the same grid, so you can probably do that. Okay.
People have spent the last 10 or 15 years calculating turbulent angular momentum diffusion rates by sort of sampling correlations and fluctuations. And as long as, I think what you want to calculate, those correlations tend to be dominated by the largest.
Yeah. So yeah, you see it on the movies. It's really the large eddies that brings the stuff up and not the small ones. So you may be able to capture that even with this low resolution simulations. And not worry about the tiny details.
You have a trick problem in developing the resolution?
No.